Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, is there a balance between a Western lifestyle and a Muslim lifestyle?
Western Muslims are usually on the receiving end of numerous accusations. While Western society condemns them for being too Muslim, the Muslim world abroad claims they have become too Western. This dilemma causes many to relieve themselves of one lifestyle completely and adopting another. Islamically speaking, this can be seen as a danger to the faith of an individual and is condemned by the religion. Thus, a balance where religion is not neglected must be implemented in the life of a Western Muslim. This week's Islam and Life asks, is there a balance between a Western lifestyle and a Muslim lifestyle?
This is an important question. If we deal with Western Muslims, very often they come with an understanding that sometimes the only right way of being a Muslim is like the Muslims are in the countries of origin. So some are very, very much trying to follow in the footsteps of the Arabs, for example, and think this is the only way to be a good Muslim. On the other side, what we have is Western Muslims being in between, perceived as too much Muslims by the West and too much Westernized by Muslims and traditional Muslims, and they are lost in trying to find their identity. And there is a kind of a rhetoric, a discourse in the media and among politicians saying that the Muslims cannot live in the West. And very recently in France, there were a survey saying that 73% of the French think that Islam is incompatible with, is not compatible with the French lifestyle and the French values. So there is a sense that there is something which is a clash between two universes of reference or frames of reference, and it's difficult even for Muslims to find their way in the way the leadership and the Muslim leadership is tackling the question. So these are critical questions that we have to ask from within the Muslim communities in the West, and also when it comes to the way we deal with Muslims in the Muslim majority countries. And these questions should be tackled, and we need to come with some critical answers. So to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Arzu Mirali from the Islamic Human Rights Commission. Thank you so much for being with us today. Let me start with something which is a very simple question and at the same time quite complex. Is there something that we can call a Muslim lifestyle?
Having had a few minutes to think about that, I think possibly yes. The answer is yes. As many as there are Muslims, there are Muslim lifestyles. I think we have to be a little bit cautious about that word itself. What is it that we're talking about? Because if we're talking about Muslims in the West, then the things that we are being targeted with about our lifestyle are the things that make us visible, the things that make us different. So there's what is it that makes us, what is our lifestyle and what our discussion is perhaps not always the same as what we are being told is our lifestyle. So the markers of difference, if you like, maybe dress, maybe prayer, maybe food, and a little bit of politics, I think, not as much as is being referenced, because actually we have a lot of political divergence as well in the Muslim community, but these are all the markers. So are we talking about, is there some sort of collective Muslim identity of difference, okay? Or are we talking about what is it that we do ourselves, you know, internally as a community?
But it's quite interesting, because what you are saying is that the way it's perceived by people of other faiths, the surrounding society, might not be exactly the same as the way we can translate what is our lifestyle. So if from within, as Muslims, just to be confident and say, okay, I'm faithful to my principles as Muslim in the West, what would be the main features of what we can call a Muslim lifestyle in the West, or a Muslim Western lifestyle?
Again, without wanting to avoid the question, but this is a thing that people are asking themselves on a daily basis often, maybe not consciously, but these are all the things that they negotiate in their daily space. So they might not always be answering the question, what is a Muslim lifestyle or what is my Muslim lifestyle? But they can see where there is sort of space for, if you like, antagonism between themselves and wider society or themselves and the state. So it might be something like, you know, having facilities to pray at school or at college or work. So again, the marker of difference is about ritual, about the thing that's obvious, that's clear. When it comes to internally in the Muslim community, you know, our fights are about how we pray, rather stupidly, I have to say, but, you know, that is what we kind of get obsessed about.
Yeah.
And, you know, not so much is the state giving us room to pray, but are the hands up, are the hands down, you know, which minute did you pray on, and so on and so forth. So, again, you can see those divergences there. Mm.
But would you say, for example, that the question itself is problematic? Mm-hmm. That when you mm-hmm. oppose two lifestyles, you say, that's not the problem.
Well, you know, the thing is, often the question is posed to us, that is an Islamic lifestyle compatible with Western values or Western lifestyle? And it's a normative question, because already it inferiorizes Islam and Muslims. So you're always going to have to explain yourself. So you're always coming from the position of inferiority. And that's a battle in itself, because, you know, as an individual, you're exhausted. As community leadership, you know, you're just floundering in a kind of political sphere where you can't actually be heard in a way that, you know, any other political actor would be, because you're always having to constantly explain your existence, and you are constantly being reduced to things which are issues. You know, supply of halal meat is something that's kicked off in the United Kingdom. I'm not negating that, but, you know, wouldn't you rather be talking about, I don't know, facilities and schools for everybody? You know, it's almost like we can only talk about our differences or what makes us different, rather than actually being able to participate fully. And the actual, if you like, burden of that is coming, you know, from the dominance of the majority culture and the majority institutions, rather than us not trying to kind of integrate or not having a compatible lifestyle. You know, most of us send our kids to state schools. We've got the same problem about failing standards. We've got the same problems about disciplines in school as everybody else. Okay, and yes, prayer is an added one, but that's not all that we think about.
But once again, because it's a strategy within the society by politicians or journalists just to keep on asking about, you know, these clashes that we have between two lifestyles and two frames of reference. At the end, making the Muslims feel that they might not be very much welcome in the society and for the surrounding society to portray the other, because this is also something which is very, this otherness is just you are not among us. But now, if we have to try step by step to try to reform this, to change this situation by saying we don't have a problem, there are many steps. The first one would be, look, when you have people, British citizens or French citizens or German citizens or Americans, even now this is happening, saying, look, you want a mosque in schools or in universities. Mm. You want to get specific food. You are not ready to accept same equal rights for the same citizens. You are against same-sex marriages. You are condemning homosexuality. All this is just making you people who are not among us. You are alien to our culture. Just to solve this problem, what would be your answer to this?
The answer to this is that there isn't a homogeneous sort of majority that is taking all of these views. And, you know, the alliances on views actually cut across ethnic boundaries. You know, often Muslims are racialized. Of course, it's all in the terms of reference of Islam.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, you know, 20 years ago, they'd be saying the same things about all Asians, or 30 years ago now, showing my age. But, you know, or as we've come back in a circle, talking about black culture, particularly in the United Kingdom, post the insurgencies or riots, whatever you want to call them, nearly 2 years ago now. So we are really kind of just, if you like, rehashing old tropes here and breaking out of that cycle. Is the continuous dilemma of any minority community, because we are always continuously having to explain ourselves using other people's terms of reference about us. So, you know, it puts us in a dilemma that, yes, there's X amount of things we can do and we should do, but that's not going to solve any problem by itself. There has to be a kind of move of conscience on the part of not dominant society. In a way, they're as much victims of this as minority communities, because they look to institutions of power for guidance, and they will look to the media, they look to the political establishment, and, you know, they, and even the legal system, which is often discriminatory, and go, well, okay, you know, there's a reason why the anti-terrorism laws target Muslims. It's because you're all terrorists. They don't know any better. So it's about leadership from those institutions, particularly governments, to say, actually, you know what, this is not what these people are like, and this is not what the issues are. So the problem we have is, how do you get power to actually shift its discourse, to actually change that? Now, that is actually where sometimes minority leaderships fail, because they don't actually see that question, you know, and right.
But is it only coming from the political leadership? Because if you look at the surveys, I was mm-hmm. referring to something that was, you know, published last mm-hmm. Week in Le Monde in France, and it's 73% of the people.
It's pretty much the same here. There were surveys in the United Kingdom as well saying it's roughly three quarters of people who say Islam and Muslims are not compatible
with life.
It's
exactly the same, and in Germany the same. So yeah. So it's not. It's
but where
the
do
people.
They get those views from? I mean, yeah. In the United Kingdom at least. There was, we're talking about 5-6 years ago now, but the surveys that were done were saying about 80%+ of white British, you know, for want of a better phrase, that's the census term, said they don't know any Muslims. This is not because, you know, Muslims are hiding, these are the demographics, you know. You just don't have physical access to people. So where do they get their information from? Well, then it is from the political leadership, it is from the media, it is from institutions. So, mm-hmm. you know, they are really only rehashing what they're being told. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only so much you can blame people
yes.
on the ground.
We can, oh, sometimes we can even blame the surveys themselves with the questions, the way they put
yes,
the questions,
yeah.
because very often they are mm-hmm. Directing the people towards this perception that they are the others.
Mm-hmm.
Second question, just to try again to reform this. As it was said in the clip, that sometimes the Muslims, when they live in the West, they are perceived as too much westernized by Muslims in Muslim-majority countries
mm-hmm.
and not enough Western by their fellow citizens,
mm-hmm.
so they are in between. Is there a way that do we have to solve this? Is there an Islamic discourse on this?
I think we tend to polarize ourselves in all sorts of different ways, and it's not helpful. I think we need to have just a better dialogue internally. Because I mean, you say this, and yes, I'm aware that there are certain sort of criticisms going this way and that way, but there are also the other criticisms, which is that there are a lot of people. Admittedly middle class and elites in sort of countries of origin who would now oftentimes people who are born and brought up here going back to those countries get quite scared at how kind of westernized those elites are and those middle classes are. So actually there's also a bit of kind of tradition sticking around and developing in a new way, but albeit in a way of religiosity in quote unquote the West or non-Muslim majority countries, whereas the actual elites and middle classes of these countries of origin have become almost a mirror image of, you know, the Oxford elite.
Mm.
So actually there's a lot of
it's much more complex than this.
Exactly,
person.
It's very complex, and we need to internally just get more savvy.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to not have conversations with each other, we tend to have conversations with power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we isolate ourselves from each other. So we are not one Muslim community, we break down into lots and lots of different Muslim communities, and we all believe we're the right one.
Mm-hmm.
And we're
yes.
the one that, you know, is being wrongly demonized. Mm. I think we internalize the negativity around us. And again, this is not a Muslim-specific problem. This is what happens with all communities and internalized racism.
Yes.
And one of the facets...
if you are a minority, face
exactly.
a majority and power.
Exactly. Yeah. And one of the facets or manifestations of that is that you internalize that negativity, and how you project it is that, well, okay, if it wasn't for those people giving us a bad name, you know, everybody would understand that we were okay, but actually it's not like that, you know, and everybody's going around saying this and looking at somebody else and saying that's the one giving us the bad name.
Mm.
So it's, you know, it's not even a case of who is it who's giving you a bad name. We all think it's somebody else.
Okay, so let us try now to come to this third stage, mm-hmm. which is how do we solve the problem? You are saying we might not have this problem. It's not a problem to mm-hmm. ask the question about the lifestyle and even the values as Muslims, we don't have a problem living in the West. Can you prove this to me?
You know, one of the things that we did at Islamic Human Rights Commission, it's getting on for about 8-9 years now.
Hmm.
We did a survey across the United Kingdom, and one of the things that we looked at was ideas about citizenship. And with that, we looked at the question of affiliation, loyalty, satisfaction of living in the country. And then you start sort of seeing, again, complexity and breakdown. So what we found, at least in the United Kingdom, is the overwhelming majority of people, you're looking again at 80% plus, felt high sense of affiliation, high sense of loyalty to the United Kingdom. I wasn't one of them, but anyway, you know, it was quite hard being the researcher and having to read that and kind of not want to scream. But at the same time saying, but we're not satisfied living here. And then when you unpack that, it's because of, you know, day-to-day discrimination and racism and so on and so forth. Now, you know, there's not really that much you can do as a victim of racism, you know, when
so,
it's structural,
so just to make
to
it,
challenge it,
yes.
you know?
So to make it clear, not unsatisfied as Muslims, they don't have a problem as Muslims, they have a problem as citizens facing socioeconomic discriminations.
No, some of it was socioeconomic, but some of it was actually related very specifically to the way they are marked out as Muslim and
as
treated
Muslim.
Differently.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, a lot of the issues were around racism or Islamophobia, discrimination, low-level incidents of hatred. There's also the issue of just seeing anti-Muslim foreign policy or kind of anti-Muslim rhetoric in the media and in public discourse. And this is something we've tried to develop in later work because we often are talking about hate crimes. We've been running a hate crime project for now a couple of years. And what we look at is the context in which hate crimes happen. So yes, we've got some alarming cases of hate crimes, you know, literally thousands of them in the United Kingdom, and they've been being documented for years. But they don't happen in isolation. So we have to see, okay, what are the causes of this? And the causes of this are not just people walking around the street randomly fueled, you know, suddenly being fueled with hatred. You know, there is a reason why they've come up with these perceptions. And the reasons are not really because they've interacted with, you know, 3 million really, really nasty Muslims in the United Kingdom. It's, you know, to do with the way the media has portrayed the community. It's about political discourse, you know, and the simplification of who we are. And that goes back to this idea of lifestyle, you know. What can we change even to make people think better of us when actually there's a continuous tirade?
So you were saying at the beginning when I asked the question that 80% are happy, they are quite satisfied.
They're not satisfied. They have affiliation and loyalty to the country.
Which is not satisfaction.
No, satisfaction is very low. In fact, the only I mean, I think I'll dig it up if I have a second, but it's about 25% in England and Wales. About 40%, 45% in Scotland, which was interesting because Scotland had a very kind of different discourse going on with the rise of the Scottish National Party, which actually had a very interestingly inclusive discourse about minorities and citizenship and so on.
So 80% are loyal. And
they feel a sense of belonging and
exactly,
affiliation.
And 25% are satisfied because of the way they are treated. And I was the question was, does it mean when you read this that there is no clash between two lifestyles, or how do we have to tackle this situation? Because at the end of the day, it might be that it's not a specific religious question, it's a question of perception, policy, and social justice.
I think this is where it comes out really in those little nuances, because where Muslims were saying, what are the problems? And they were marking out discrimination, racism, and so on. The issues are not about, you know, it's because I'm a Muslim and therefore I can't participate. Yes, few people said things like this. And, you know, to be fair, that's their right. There are, you know, Orthodox Jews and everybody else in the United Kingdom, including members of the mainstream community, will say, well, you know, I just don't want to know if you don't look like me, okay? Or you don't think like me. But the overwhelming majority of people were, well, you know, we're loyal. We waved, you know, we support the football team and all the rest of it, and all these things that, you know, some of us might find a bit, you know, but apologies to England supporters. But at the end of the day, they not feeling able to have, you know, the kind of reciprocity that is needed for there to be meaningful citizenship, because they're not getting, if you like, they're not getting the love back from the institutions of power. You know, they're actually being told, well, you know, it doesn't matter how much you feel like you belong here, it doesn't matter how well you speak the language or that you were born here or that you support this team or whatever, you're still different and you're still not one of us. So that's where the satisfaction levels were low. And, you know, the things that are needed, a better, more ethical foreign policy, you know, an end to kind of structural discrimination and so on, these are not things that we can, you know, as individuals or as small communities do anything about. You know, at the end of the day, we can lobby for it, but if there isn't a willing partner to listen on the where the institutions are, you know, that's actually where the problem is. So the lifestyle issue is a bit of a red herring, you know. Yes, of course, we need places to pray, we need, you know, proper services for halal meat and, you know, things to be respected, but that's not the be-all and end-all, and that's just service delivery. You know, if but it wasn't that we were Muslims, who would be jumping up and down about it?
But when you are saying that, you know, the partner is not listening, not willing to listen, power is not... Isn't it that we need to come also to the Muslim citizens to say you might have to change the way you deal with power and the authority in this country? Because at the end of the day, the power is going to promote this, because there are interest in promoting such an ideology of potential confrontation, the other and security is coming out of this and the whole policies that we know. Don't we have a responsibility from within, and what would be the best reaction or action or behavior?
It's easy for me to knock down everything that everybody's doing, so I'm trying to be a little bit cautious. But I think, you know, if it's in terms of trying to lobby or to, I don't know, seek ministerial meetings and have all of these kind of interactions, the Muslim community has been pretty good at doing that. Where it's, if you like, perhaps not savvy, Oh, in a way, it's not even fair to say that, you know, is that it's in a continuous bind. If you don't, if you're not the flavour of the month, who needs to listen to you? And to be the flavour of the month, you have to compromise. And the more you compromise, the less you become relevant to the people you're supposed to represent.
Yes.
So in a way, okay, you know, what is it that we're going to do? It's not an easy question to solve. And I think the fact that so many people have now kind of gone through a succession of becoming irrelevant to the masses is kind of a dilemma within the Muslim community. You know, we haven't really got a dynamic leadership, with all respect to some really very serious figures and people who've really tried. You know, we lack a kind of political cohesion and unity that's kind of needed to have a movement. We're very, very sort of fractured. And at the same time, we haven't really kind of embraced a radical enough discourse with power to kind of, if you like, keep them on their toes. You know, we tend to compromise a lot. And, you know,
domestic and foreign policies, you mean?
Both. You know, and sometimes we tend to think that, you know, you can play one off against the other, but they are intimately connected. Mm. And as much as anyone tries to tell us they're not, that is the case. And we have to really start understanding structure, you know, structure of Western liberal democracy, if you like, and how it actually disadvantages the small people, both, you know, the masses generally, but also minorities as groups. If we're going to try and find a meaningful way around this, you know, it is about kind of structural change for everybody. It's not just about me with my Muslim hat going, you know, you're oppressing me. If it's not going to be us today, it's going to be somebody else tomorrow. We have to kind of look at how we can break that cycle of demonization and marginalization.
Yes, and but it means that the leadership, it should be much more involved in this.
It does, but it needs to be involved in the sense of, you know, being more proactive. I think we come with a lot of cultural baggage. A lot of people have come. I don't mean actually literally come. I mean, you know, even people who are born and brought up in the West, with sort of certain ideas of how the liberal nation state works, how democracy works, and, you know, how wonderful it is. And yes, it has obviously got merits, but, you know, there isn't one democracy and there isn't one way to be represented. And we need to be finding solutions of how to make that work for everybody.
Thank you so much. I think, once again, the last point that you are making, it's quite important as to the leadership knowing better the way it works in the country, in the West, within democracy, with power, and also the way to be connected to the communities. Because it's true that the crisis in the leadership is very often, you can talk to power. The question is, how much are you connected to the grassroots and to the communities? And then coming to the discussion that we had, and very much this discussion about the two lifestyles, it might be that this is a diversion from the very essence of this discussion, because it might be that there is no problem as to be a Muslim and to be a practicing Muslims and to be a British or to be a European. The problems are elsewhere. But still, it's a socio-economic and a religious discussion when it comes to being targeted because you are Muslim, being targeted because you are perceived as such. And all this rhetoric is something that we have to tackle. So the leadership is important. And the way we tackle the question and we ask the question about this, it's also something which is important. And what you said on this is something which is also giving us, we need the comprehensive approach and not something which is completely scattered and answering to some of the questions and not getting a sense of everything is connected. In fact, domestic and foreign policies, for example, is something that we have to tackle together. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen. And here is the way to contact us.
Islam and Life welcomes your opinion. So please send us your suggestions as well as criticism on any of the shows you have seen or you would like to see. You can do all this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also be part of our online platform by joining our Facebook page, Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage with debate, and view past shows.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Arzu Mirali. Thank you so much for your presence, and I hope to see you next week, inshallah.